behind home plate. We bringing it to them all day. All day. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Birdland. Win or lose, we bringing it to you always. Always. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Orange or black, we rebuild the pack. No matter where we at, you know we coming back. Section 336, we on this, so tune in. Tune in. You know what's up? Welcome to Birdland. Yeah. Welcome to Birdland. You know what's up, son. Welcome to Birdland. Birdland.
Now, here come the boys from Section 336.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Baltimore sports fans of all ages, welcome to Section 336, Next Generation Baltimore Sports Talk. I'm your endearingly stunning host, Matt Soroka, who just figured out how to turn on his mic after our 500th episode. As always, I'm joined by a guy who is in the middle of sending his highlight tapes to the Baltimore Ravens in hope of getting a position at wide receiver, the button lover, Josh Soroka.
Yeah, that mute button's really tricky. But you're right. It's what's more evasive, the mute button to you or having a wide receiver in Baltimore?
Yeah. Well, in the words of infamous words of Rashad Bateman, LOL. That was his response to all the action.
Okay, not the Deshaun Jackson's infamous words.
What were his words?
I'm back. I'm off the couch.
Yeah, yeah. He's off the couch for now. Over under two starts before he's injured and out of the game again.
I don't know. Isn't this just the story of the Ravens? Is Raven fans, we need a wide receiver. We need a wide receiver. We need a wide receiver. We don't get a wide receiver.
Yeah.
And then we go on the season.
Well, we said and we convinced ourselves that Rashad Bateman could be that number one option.
Yeah.
And then he gets hurt and he misses, you know, a bunch of important games. And then that guy has the nerve to tweet LOL when he's the cause of the panic of signing Deshaun Jackson. Like, no, you LOL yourself, bud. You're the reason this is even happening.
Right. Mr. LOL. Exactly. LOL is the fact that you can't play in a game.
Yeah. I mean, Duvernay has stepped up and played well. But we knew this coming in that we had no. It's a problem when one of your leading receivers in a game is Josh Oliver. That's not how you draw it up. That's not what you were planning for. So we'll see what happens.
Right. You're not going to, you're likely not going to win if Likely is on the field.
Yeah. If he's one of your leading targets, you know, I was thinking about this too. We'll get into the playoffs. We'll talk about kind of the Orioles, revisit some of our bold predictions, but I was thinking like this in terms of baseball. Like the Ravens would be perfect if this was a baseball season because they could float around 500, maybe a little bit of over 500 with one glaring need, upgrade at wide receiver. You get to the trade deadline, you know, and you do what teams do in baseball in the playoff hunt and you get the best wide receiver on the board for some, you know, 20th and 18th ranked prospect. And all of a sudden, your one weakness becomes a strength. And this is what baseball teams do all the time. And I know there's been talks about, you know, DJ Moore and other moves the Ravens could make. But trades just don't happen in football like they do in baseball. And there's not the prospects that you can trade from and all that stuff.
And the trades in baseball season make happen past the halfway point of the season.
Right.
In football, there's not enough games for an impact like that to make sense.
Yeah.
As well.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about, I always watch the playoffs with an eye towards what the Orioles can take away from it.
Yeah.
And I think it's very encouraging for the Orioles, what I've witnessed, because in the National League specifically, let's talk there for a second. We've seen the top teams knocked out, the three 100 win teams in the NL knocked out. But I think some people are missing the point because people are saying, well, you know, is this fair? Or, you know, the better team obviously lost. But what people forget is both the Phillies and the Padres made significant upgrades at the trade deadline. And the Padres, obviously, Josh Hader, he got all their saves in the postseason. He's a trade deadline guy. They obviously also got Juan Soto at the trade deadline. That's an obvious upgrade. So they made moves at the trade deadline. The Phillies are the same. Noah Syndergaard, who pitched right in that final game, he was an upgrade. Dave Robertson, they got for the bullpen. I think Marsh, they got also, who played really well in the playoffs. I think the Padres also got Josh Bell. if I recall correctly, at the trade deadline. So all these teams made moves to upgrade at the deadline that really aren't reflected in their record. And I think that's what you have to do. You don't have to have 110 wins. What you need to do is have a good team, and then at the trade deadline, make good moves to upgrade areas of weakness into areas of strength.
Right.
What the Phillies did, what the Padres did, and hopefully what the Orioles will do in 2023.
Yeah, and that's why there's a little bit of pushback of people saying, well, we need to figure out baseball so that the division winners have a more of an advantage, because this year it did not have any advantage.
Yeah, because the team of 100 games is a better team. But no, after the trade deadline, maybe they weren't the better team. Like, maybe you should have done more at the trade deadline.
Exactly.
And we saw the same thing happen last year with the Braves, right? The Braves were almost completely different outfield after the trade deadline. And so it's not what you do in over the course of the entire season. It's kind of where you are at the end. What upgrades have you made? How healthy you are? And then there's some who gets hot, who gets lucky. Like, there's some of that too, but that's part of what makes baseball exciting and great. And Michael Elias, he talks about this all the time. He doesn't talk about winning the World Series hardly ever. He talks about increasing the opportunities to make the playoffs, because he knows it's just, you just get in the playoffs, and then, you know, it's a little bit of a roll of the dice. You got to get in the show. You have to be in the dance. You got to get invited to the playoffs to kind of let the dice roll.
Be in the show, get to the dance, invited. Any other cliches you want to throw out there about making it into the postseason?
Well, I'm just saying, if you don't get the invitation, then unless you want to crash the party, but I don't think you can even crash the party.
I don't have my playoffs button here for you yet. Do not be missing the playoffs button.
Yeah, but it's been a good playoffs. It's kind of a little bit rooting for the Mets. I hate to see the Mets go down. Then I was kind of rooting for the Braves a little bit, just because I'm here in Georgia. And that didn't work out. I know everyone loves Manny. I used to really enjoy when Eric RDT would post all the Manny videos. It's gotten a little bit old to me. I'm kind of getting past Manny.
I'm beyond past Manny. I'm at the point where Manny irritates me.
Yeah, I'm not there yet, but I'm kind of in that direction.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I kind of don't care at all right now about baseball.
Yeah, I've always been a Bryce Harper guy. I feel like Bryce Harper got a bad rap for his, I thought he's always been one of the top players in baseball, and somehow he's talked about like he's this overpaid guy who never lived up to the hype, which I think is totally false. I've always been kind of a Bryce Harper guy. I like Juan Soto too. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to the series. I'm certainly rooting for the Yankees. I guess the Yankees to lose. I'm rooting for the Astros.
Weird time to pause that you're rooting for the Yankees.
I'm rooting for the Yankees to lose.
I understand. Let me
clarify that. And then, which means I'm rooting for the Astros. I really don't want to root for the Astros. I don't really like any of the teams left, but it kind of is what it is. I can root against the Yankees, I guess, from here on out.
Yeah, it's going to be, and it's root for next season. It's root for baseball season to end, because what do I really care about right now? I care about when free agency opens up the day after the World Series. That's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about Carlos Correa turning down his option.
Yep.
I'm excited about DeGrom being a free agent and just sitting there waiting, because you know phone calls are being made and conversations are being had, even though they're not allowed to make any deals now.
Yeah.
You know, there's some say, hey, if I call you in a couple weeks, what would you be thinking type phone calls?
Yeah. Though I'm not holding my breath, because, you know, lately, the past several off seasons, these conversations have often pushed into, you know, February. December and January and even February. Yes. Yeah. Even into the start of spring training.
Yeah. But I think we are, I don't think that's the position the Orioles are in this year. The Orioles, I don't believe, are in a position to wait until February.
We'll see. We'll see. I don't know if they're in a position to also, you know, just blow the doors off someone financially.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly spend more money than we have been. But I mean, I think our first decision, which would be interesting, is at some point soon, right? We got to decide whether we're going to pick up the option, the $11 million or $10 million option on Jordan Lyles. I think it's $11 million, but he has a $1 million buyout. So do you want to spend $10 million more to keep Jordan Lyles around? is I think the first decision we have to make. So, and then, and then the free agency party happens.
Yeah. And I, truth is, I'm kind of, you could convince me either way with the Jordan Lyles. I can go in either direction and I'm happy.
Yeah.
I just can't. I'm happy with his performance.
Yeah. I just can't wait to Josh to come on here every week when someone signs and he doesn't sign with the Orioles. Josh to come here and be shocked and outraged every week that a top free agent signs with another team not named the Orioles.
No. I hope we're not having that conversation. I hope that in 2 weeks we're talking about who did sign with the Orioles.
Yeah. I was looking at the, and we'll get into it in future episodes because I want to talk about our bowl prediction, but I was looking at the free agents. You know, it's fine. I was looking at offensive players. It's fine. Like, there's no one special. I mean, the shortstop position is the elite position. Like, if you're going to sign a guy, I mean, Trey Turner, Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts, and a little step down, Dansby Swanson. I mean, those are the biggest names in free agency. So, like, if you want to make a splash, you're signing one of those four guys.
Agreed.
And that's kind of offensively. I mean, there's Aaron Judge, of course, but outside of that, offensively, there's nice players, but there's no one that would be a huge upgrade in our lineup. Maybe I think Nolan Arenado has an opt out. I think he can opt out, so that maybe that would be the exception. The only other guy that would make a huge offensive kind of difference with this team. But it's like we're at the point now where we're pretty good at every position, so you can't just sign a pretty good player. You need to sign an elite player for it to be an upgrade. So we'll see if they do.
Yeah, we'll see. I saw Keith Law has been out watching the Arizona League stuff.
Yeah. There's and a story brewing there.
Yeah, about Kerstad. Heston Kerstad. Yeah, he said that it was interesting. His article, a little blurb on Kerstad, said, several scouts told me that Baltimore Heston Kerstad looked good in the first week of play. That sounds promising. But I saw more of the same rust that I saw for him during the regular season. He's behind on good velocity, has trouble picking up the off-speed stuff, even from right-handers. He says, I'm inclined to give him a pass based on missing 2021 with myocarditis and 2020 with the pandemic. But it's been and taken. He had 27 months off between in-game at-bats. I'm still rooting for him, but I'm also concerned that he had such trouble with average major league stuff every time I saw him. That's a little concerning. I'm with Keith Law there.
That you're not a Heston Kerstad guy anymore?
I am still a Heston Kerstad guy.
You're now a Keith Law guy, more than an Oriole prospect guy. I see you, Josh. Okay.
You're a Keith Law guy now.
All right.
No. I'm just saying.
You're going to start reading Buster Olney's articles to us, too, and talking about how you agree with Buster Olney, too?
No, did Buster Olney write anything recently on the Orioles?
No, he doesn't care about the Orioles.
Surprised he hasn't written anything about the brothers yet.
No, I mean, listen, I watched Heston Kerstad play a couple times last year.
Yeah.
And I walked away unimpressed. Last year at Aberdeen, he put up a batting average of .233. That's not great. And what concerned me is, I never saw him hit with any power. Now, I know in the fall league, he has four home runs, which sounds good. I tell you what, he played all last year. He played in 70. Well, I mean, he didn't play all last year. He played in 65 games last year, had five home runs all year, won 10 games at the Arizona Fall League, already has four. So to me, I know one of those was inside the park run.
All right.
But the power numbers for me, it was like I didn't see any power. I think I saw Heston Kerstad have one hit in the few games I saw him at the minors, and that was an infield single. It was an infield little dribbler that he got the first on. But again, he's coming up. I think the big story with him this year was to be healthy. He's so healthy, in fact, that he's able to continue playing in the Arizona Fall League, which just the fact that he's healthy enough to play in the Arizona Fall League is encouraging. He's 23 now, so he's no longer this kind of spring chicken, but he's not, I think, viewed as a top prospect in our system anymore, right? Like it's not like if he doesn't work out, our rebuild kind of takes a huge step back. It's not like that.
No, I think it's, but I also think part of it is that we had Adley and Gunnar, and we had the top number one in all of baseball, followed by the number one in all of baseball. That's a hard that's a hard thing to follow. And I think because of that, it's very easy to expect a third number one in to expect all of our guys coming up to be number ones in baseball.
Oh, yeah. Now, I mean, I kind of had the opposite view of it. And right now he's ranked ninth in our top 30 prospects. Where I'm like, we've hit on so many prospects that
someone's got to go wrong.
Well, and like, I feel like Heston Kjerstad, I don't need to worry about him. He's like house money. Like if he, after all he's been through, if he comes back and becomes a productive player, like I don't expect it, but that's kind of, that's icing on top. But even without, you know, Heston Kjerstad, we still have, you know, Colton Cowser, who had a great,
right.
He's kind of like the new Gunnar Henderson, I feel like, the Colton Cowser. And we have in the outfield.
Yeah, I understand that.
And we, you know, we have eight guys who are ranked better than this former top pick, but that is, it's one of those things where we'll never know how his career would have been different if we never lost that time. And it is kind of a swing and a miss so far in that draft for Mike Elias. But certainly something to watch. I mean, no one's writing him off at this point. And
That's,
I'm curious to see what he does next year.
The whole reason he's in the fall league is because he needs more at bats. Because he needs time still.
Right. And if his issues with timing, that's fine. Like, he'll get his timing right.
Yeah.
But so far, he's putting up really good numbers in the Arizona Fall League. And listen, Keith Law's there. He's watching him, I guess. But the numbers on paper, I mean, he's already, like I said, he's got four home runs. He also has four doubles in just 10 games. So eight extra base hits in 10 games, batting .404, slugging over 1,000. I'm sorry, he's OPS over 1,000. So, yeah, he's off to a really hot start in the Arizona Fall League, and he's certainly a guy to watch next year in the Orioles system.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, you want to revisit here some of our bold predictions?
Yeah, because, I mean, we predicted that the Orioles would have an over 500 season. We predicted a huge bounce back year for the Orioles.
Not exactly.
All right, well, let's get to the bold predictions. I know you had time this week that you were able to go through and make
what and actually do prep for the show.
Yeah, what I as I told Kelly before the show, I said, now hits the time of the show where it's a little more difficult and we have to do a little prep each week. During the season, we don't do prep.
Well, I always do prep. You don't do prep. I always do prep.
I do a lot of prep. I do a lot of prep that you don't. I do a lot of prep that you don't see.
Okay. Well, you see my prep in the show notes.
I do. You do excellent prep.
Yeah, and you're right. I predicted the Orioles would only have 82 wins. They surpassed my expectations.
No, you didn't. You didn't predict 82.
Yes, did you really? They got 83, so I undersold them a little bit.
You predicted 82.
I didn't predict 82. I predicted 67 wins.
67. All right. So that's not for you. What did I predict?
And Josh got on the microphone, and Josh is like, you know what? I'm going super optimistic. I don't care what the haters say. I'm going to say they're going to win 20 more games than they did the previous year. I'm going to say they win 72 games.
That's pretty good. That's better than you. I win that one.
Okay. Five more games you had them winning. Still, you had them 72 and 90.
So what?
I would call that an accurate prediction.
When I said 72, would you call me crazy?
No, I mean 67. I don't think it's worth. No, we were kind of
five games off. All right. Yeah. But I'm going to take that win. I'm going to take that as a win that I got closer than you.
But our argument, and my argument still was, like my argument was when I said 67 wins, well, we have made no upgrades. Like we signed Jordan Lyles and Rougned Odor, which, you know, aren't huge upgrades. We've done nothing else with this roster. This roster, you know, lost 110 games the year before.
Right.
Why would they be over 500? And our only reason, the only reason we could see is, well,
you got Friday.
Right. And your prediction that Hall, Rodriguez, and Rutschman would all be here by June.
Yeah,
and,
I got one.
And they would kind of carry the team.
That's true.
But it didn't happen at all. Like only
But I'm saying you're right. That's why I went with the 20 wins and the jump in wins is because I thought we'd have those guys up here.
But if I told you that DL Hall only made a handful of relief appearances, and if I told you that Grayson Rodriguez didn't play any games for the Orioles,
right, I wouldn't have gone with that prediction.
You would have gone less wins. And yet that happened, and they got more wins. But no, my predictions as a whole are so horrendous. I was so off base with this team. It's embarrassing.
But everyone was. No one got the team right.
Yours is better than mine, though. Okay, so let's go through them.
Well, I got those orange colored glasses I'm always wearing. That helps.
Yeah. So your first bold prediction was the all up by June. Adley was up by June, but not the rest of them, obviously. And we talked about also, like, we did a whole thing with Adley's call up date. You said May 16th. I said May 6th. I think, what was it, May 21st, I want to say, was his call-up date. So you were pretty close to that, just 5 days. But we both got the right month in May for Adley's call-up day. I believe it was right after that 13-inning Rognito Odor home run game.
May 21st.
Okay, May 21st.
This is his first day.
Your bold prediction, your next bold prediction, Josh, was spot on. You said Gunnar Henderson forces the Orioles to call him up by September. You nailed it.
You made fun of me for that one.
I said it was a bold prediction.
You told me that there was no way Gunnar would be up this season.
I couldn't remember if
I made my prediction from before September or if I said he'd be up by July. So that's good. I'm glad I went with September.
Yep. You said by September. My bold prediction was the Orioles would go 19-8 in June. I went back and looked at the schedule.
They had some tough losses there where they could have easily done that.
Yeah, they went 14-12. And there were some tough games, especially against, like, Josh, against Seattle.
Yeah, the first one that came to mind was the Mariners. For me.
We lost 2 out of 3 to Seattle. And you're like, ugh. And then right after that, we lost 2 out of 3 to the Twins. And all those Twins games were, like, one-run games. Remember, like, the Ray Lopez blew back-to-back saves?
That's when we came on here after those games, and we're like, these games sting. These are games that we had a chance to win. And these are the games that we said were going to cost us with any type of playoff run.
Yep, it's true that they did. I mean, if you take those Mariners and that twin series where we end up losing 4 in a row, 2 to the Mariners, 2 to the Twins. And then after that, we actually went on a 10-game winning streak. But we lost four in a row to the Twins and the Mariners. That comes back and haunts you. And then you lose 2 out of 4 to Kansas City. That hurt as well. There was some. Then, of course, this is later in the season, but the Detroit series. Like, I was just looking at the schedule today, getting real depressed about all kind of what should be for a pretty good baseball team, winnable games. Yeah. And then, like, you lose 2 out of 3 to Cincinnati. Like, what kind of nonsense was that? Why would we lose 2 out of 3 to Cincinnati? We lost 2 out of 3 later in the month to Boston. Like, what is that? Like, Boston, I feel like, I don't know what our record against was Boston, but Boston had way too many wins against us this year. I'll tell you that much. Way too many wins against us this year.
So I'm sure one of my predictions was that we would be in the stands ahead of Boston.
No, we all finished that they would finish last.
We all went last?
We all went last. Right. Your next bold prediction was that Trey would be traded by July 4th.
Oh, okay.
That didn't happen. You're a little early.
Yeah. But I had the right move. I knew Trey would get traded.
Yeah. In comparison, my bold prediction that Trey Mancini would lead the team in home runs, not be traded, and be the Orioles' MBO. I was wrong.
Big difference.
Yeah, on all accounts.
Hey, right now you want to make a bold prediction? Where does Trey Mancini play next year?
He has really struggled for the Mariners.
Yes.
Really struggled for the Mariners. It's been
He's been even worse for the Astros.
What did I just say?
For the Mariners.
Oh, she's talking about the Mariners. Yeah, the Astros. He's been painful to watch for the Mariners.
Yes.
He's been very bad. I'm kind of rooting for him with some postseason heroics to make people forget about how bad he's been.
Yeah.
I don't think he's coming back to the Astros.
No.
I think he's going to be relatively cheap.
I think he's going to be very cheap.
I don't know who needs what. You know, I want him to sign with the Orioles. I know it's not a huge offensive upgrade, and I don't want that to be the third guy we add on offense, not the main guy we add on offense.
But I think he comes back to Baltimore. But I think he comes back to Baltimore in like a Rougned Odor type situation where he's a cheap veteran to add in this lineup that can play first base.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that he can maybe how they use Aguilera, Jesus Aguilar this year. Yes. Or, yeah, just as a platoon guy, maybe how the Astros are using him now. I think, yeah, I also think for Mancini, like, I think after his experience with the Astros, it might also be some part of Mancini saying, maybe I'm more comfortable playing in Baltimore. Right. Even with that big old wall.
Right. Even with the wall. You know, yeah. And you go from being a star in Baltimore, where you go to a town where nobody cares about you.
Yeah. Big and difference. And when Mancini struggles, we know his story. You know, he's got history with us. There's no history, right, with the Astros. So when he struggles, nope. They just see this bad baseball player.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think as long as he's not the main thing the Orioles do, he is a nice veteran leader, platoon player. I think like Elias has shown by his addition of Aguilar and Brett Phillips that he's cares about veteran leadership, I guess. And
right.
And his insistence on keeping Odor there. So it makes sense if they care about leadership, which it seems like they do.
And we know
Mancini would make sense to bring back.
And we know Mike Elias really likes Trey Mancini.
Yeah, and he's not blocking anybody. He's blocking Jesus Aguilar. Like, that's okay. You can block right. him all you want.
No, and it's, again, a platoon situation.
Yeah.
It's a rotate through, give different guys time off.
Yeah. If you're hot, okay, you keep on starting. If you struggle, right. all right, you'll sit down for a few days. Yep. Yeah. So next bold prediction. Speaking of MVO, you said that Mullins – would repeat his amazing year and be the MVO again.
No.
He had a little bit of a setback this year. Still good. Still a good player.
Yeah. But, yeah, not quite. And not quite MVO. And I also, to be fair, Adley played better than I expected.
Yeah.
And improved as the season went on.
Yeah, all the hype for Adley was real. I mean, it's kind of remarkable. It's not even, if you look at things like war, you know, he's far and away. Mullins was actually second in war, but according to Fangraphs, F-war, he was still two whole war points behind Adley Rutschman. So clearly Adley Rutschman was our best player. Though Mullins had a decent year. My next bold prediction would that attendance would go up compared to next year, go up compared to last year,
yeah,
and that we would have 3 sellouts.
Okay. I don't think we got the 3 sellouts.
No, I thought the 3 sellouts would be opening day, which I believe was a sellout. Adley Rutschman Day, which was an underwhelming, enthusiastic, but underwhelming crowd.
Yes.
And Grace Rodriguez, but which we never saw.
Right.
But the attendance did go up to 1,368,367, which was the highest since 2018. So a step in the right direction.
Which is big because 2019 was the last year with full no COVID stuff.
Right. In the past 2 years was COVID stuff. So we're right. back to where so we were previously.
Yeah, which is good that we're on the upswing there. And next year is going to be even better because they've been pushing for 2 weeks now. They've been pushing these Birdland memberships. I get an email once a week asking me to buy Birdland memberships, and I have a Birdland membership.
I haven't seen anything. Yeah, I think they're going to top 2 million next year. That's I'll do a bold prediction right now. Over 2 million next year.
What was the number this year?
1,368,000. So 700,000. 2 million,
that's a big jump. That's a really big jump.
I know.
700,000 divided by 81. And what's that? An increase of about 10,000 a game? All right. What they hit in 2016? Did they pass 2 million during those years?
I don't know. Do I still have my stats up?
That's all right.
Yeah, I don't still have my stats up.
2 million
up
sounds like a really big jump, but it's totally, I can totally see it being possible.
But
the team's good.
During the playoff years, they were over 2 million.
All right, that's what we're going back to. So yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we can pass 2 million. I'm with you.
Your bold prediction was Tyler Wells and Mike Bauman in the rotation to start the season. I think you got Tyler Wells right.
Tyler Wells got in there.
Yeah. Mike Bauman, I think he started like 2 games maybe for the Orioles all year.
Well, if you remember, we did this in like February or March. Our rotation was crap. Of course, when the season ended, our rotation was crap.
Yeah. I mean, it was like throwing darts at the board on who would start. We had all these names, but yeah, we knew Means and we knew Lyles. Outside of that, we didn't know anybody. Yeah.
Right.
My next bold prediction would Grayson Rodriguez would lead the team in strikeouts.
Oh, well, he did.
He would. For that to happen, he would need to pitch.
Yeah.
Your bold prediction was Ryan Mountcastle will make the All-Star team.
Yeah, he had a down year. Speaking of down years, let's push both those bold predictions to next year.
You would say Ryan Mountcastle had a down year?
Yeah, Mountcastle definitely had a down year.
All right.
Yeah.
You expect them to have a better year next year?
I hope so. But I'd say next year, Adley and Gunnar and Grayson go to the All-Star game.
Oh, you're always putting that on the board now.
Yeah.
Jorge Lopez, by the way, was our lone All-Star representative. It would be nice to have more than one guy in the All-Star
next game. Year, bold predictions next year are going to be fun when we go in with our orange-colored glasses after this season and we're going in knowing we're winning the World Series. Bold predictions is going to be fun.
Yeah. I mean, if you look a quick note about Ryan Mountcastle before I forget. If you look at his numbers last year compared to this year, all right, last year, walk rate 7%. This year, walk rate 7.1%. Last year, strikeout rate 27%. This year, 25%. Last year, batten average 255. This year, 250. Last year, bat on base percentage 309. This year, 305.
The only then why big, does it feel that bad? A strikeout
big
number
difference is home runs. Last year, 33 home runs. This year, 22 home runs.
So the flash of a home run definitely makes you feel differently about a guy.
And I wonder how much of that too is the wall. You know,
it's the Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore. And we'd have to go back and, I don't know, I'm sure someone's done this and looked at how many Ryan Mountcastle home runs would not be home runs.
Yeah, that's some stat stuff. We don't get into that.
But and I guess also, too, I mean, if you want to say Ryan Mountcastle down year, he had almost an identical year to last year. But
I do feel
I
like
we were expecting
defensively. I will give him that.
Yes, he improved defensively.
He is a better first baseman than I expected.
Yeah. And I think by the way, this is again why I hate war, because it has his defense as -9.5, though to show improvement the year before his defensive war was -20. But I wonder if that was a little bit of outfield play too.
Right.
But yeah, he improved greatly offensively. He improved greatly defensively. And I think the disappointing thing about his offense is you thought he was going to make the next step.
Yes.
And he just didn't. And so I'm curious if this is just who he is, a 250 hitter who's going to hit in the 20s with home runs, or if he can improve with on-base percentage and stuff like this.
Yeah, and with a better lineup around him.
Yeah, and a better lineup might help too. I feel like on a good team like that, he's like a number 7 hitter or something.
Right.
I don't know if that's good enough at the first base position. So we'll see.
No, it's very similar to look at Trey in Houston. He's top of the lineup in Baltimore, move him to Houston, and they don't need him right up there at the top.
Yeah, and hopefully we're to that point where we're good enough that if he continues to hit like that, he's hitting at the bottom of our lineup.
Yeah, he would be. He'd be – well, if the home run power comes back, that's a different story. That moves him up in that 4-5 slot. Otherwise, you're right, it's 6-7-8.
Right. Other bold predictions. Let's see. I was, so wrong with this one. Tyler, I don't know what I was thinking.
Tyler Wells prediction?
No, Tyler Nevin. What was he even doing at Tyler Nevin prediction?
Who cares about Tyler Nevin?
I don't know. I don't care about Tyler Nevin. Why did I say he's going to have over 20 home runs this year? I don't even know what I was thinking.
You were really excited about some Tyler Nevins.
I barely know Tyler Nevin's name. Why would I predict he has 20 home runs for the Orioles this year? I don't know if he even did he even play in 20 Orioles games this year. Surely he didn't start 20 Orioles games this year. That was a terrible prediction.
That's fine.
That's a swing and a miss for me. Going back to your predictions, and by the way, he ended the year with two home runs for the Orioles. So there's that. Your prediction, and this was, I wouldn't call this a bold prediction, by the way. Listening back on the podcast, this was a prediction, not a bold prediction. But you said Jorge Mateo would become an everyday player.
I said that. That's a great prediction. I see what you're saying. I meant like he would be a guy that instead of just being a placeholder, that we would see him as a legit guy. And I believe that happened. I know you're going to say, well, he's always been a everyday player. But I stand by that prediction. I'm happy with that prediction. I think that's one of the exciting parts of this season is the improvement of Jorge Mateo.
You think Jorge Mateo is in the opening day lineup next year?
That's where it gets tough. That's a tough position. Does he deserve to be? Yes.
He becomes an everyday player. I would assume that's going forward.
Yes.
You think he plays for the Orioles in more than 100 games next year?
I think he is in the major leagues for more than 100 games next year.
What, you think the Orioles might trade him?
I think he could be a trade candidate. I think he could be a trade candidate because they have other position players available that are coming up. But outside of a trade, yeah, he'll be in the lineup on opening day and 100 games.
All right. And this last one for me makes me sound like an idiot again. I don't know what I was thinking. I said Ramon Urias becomes a top five shortstop in the majors. I was really high on Ramon Urias. Dude's not even a shortstop. But he had a decent year. He had a fine year.
You should have just followed me with Mateo. You could have said that about Mateo, and I would have been like, might have even given that to you this year.
Yeah, we would have made an argument about Jorge Mateo being, you know, defensively and offensively a top guy. But Ramon Urias had a good year. He was fourth on the team in F-War. Ben McDonald loved to make comments about him being a guy with sneaky pop. He did end the year right with 16 home runs, which is by far kind of a career high for him in the majors. So all those things were good to see. On base, .248, which is not great, but I'm sorry, batting average .248, which is not great, but he did have some pop and was really good defensively and can play kind of multiple defensive positions, can be that second base, third base, shortstop if you need him in a pinch. I thought Ramon Urias had a nice year. The top five shortstop is silly, but he had a nice year. All right, that's it for the bold predictions.
All right, well, I'd say clearly I won the bold predictions this year.
Yeah, like I give me some props for June. We did have a winning record in June, which no one would have thought. And I called that. And then our attendance did improve, but not the sellouts. Everything else was a huge swing and miss for me. You did get that Trey would be traded, just got the day wrong. You got Gunnar call up in September, which was a good one for you. And Mateo being an everyday player, I'll give you that one too. So yeah, you got three. I'll give you that. Your bold prediction is better this year than mine.
I'll take it.
But we talked, I was listening back to the podcast too, and we talked about how it was kind of an impossible year to predict. Like you had no idea because there was just so many unknowns. We didn't even know what the starting rotation would look like. We didn't even know who was starting a shortstop. There was just a litany of unknowns with that team. And next year, it feels like a completely different story. Next year, at this point, I feel like I can pencil in a rotation and everyday lineup And I feel like with each addition, there's some obvious spots for these additions to go. Now we'll see what happens with the trade deadline and stuff. But I feel like no matter what, we're going to have a very clear, definitive idea of who's going to be playing shortstop every day, who's going to be in the start rotation every day. Yeah, Carlos Correa, Trey Turner, they can compete for starting shortstop, and the other guy can move to second or whatever.
Little rock, paper, scissors every morning.
Yeah.
Who gets shortstop, who gets second base?
Yeah. And I'm curious to see also, no one's really talking about it, but what Elias does with the trades. I know he was trying at the trade deadline to move a piece that he was trying to move, I think for a major league piece, he said.
Right.
And so I think there's a possibility.
There's something out there he wants.
Yeah, if you just look at the free agents available, maybe they don't excite you. You don't want to spend all that money. You want more years of team control.
Right.
You have a great farm system. It makes sense to trade for peace as well.
Yeah, just because Ohtani signed a big extension doesn't mean he's not on a trade chip.
Ohtani didn't sign an extension.
Yeah, didn't he sign like a 7-year deal?
No, he signed his arbitration deal to avoid arbitration.
I thought he did an extension.
Unless that's breaking news and I completely missed it. No.
No, I thought he did it like a while ago.
He didn't sign it.
See a tiny contract.
Yeah, you're so I think you got like a $30 million
A 1 year $30 million.
To avoid arbitration. Yeah.
That was just an avoid, so that was just a 1 year deal.
Yes. And so after that, after this year, he's gonna be a free agent.
Which means I don't know. Is it really worth the Angels are not in a place? That's a weird move for the Angels because they're not really in a place to spend $30 million on one guy that's not going to bring them the World Series.
Right. I mean, this is a similar conversations. I think the ownership might be a little bit in flux too. This is a similar conversation to what the Nationals were having with Juan Soto, right? Like, we love Juan Soto. He's young. We can build around him.
Right.
But we stink.
Yeah.
So what do we do? And he really probably doesn't want to play with us anyway because we stink. So what do we do? And they ended up obviously trading Juan Soto for a buttload of prospects.
Which means, Ohtani might be a trade
similar. Yeah.
So, again, like we said, we've said before, would fix two of our needs.
It would.
And a big pitching. And all that for $30 million? That's a steal.
It's an absolute steal.
So give up whoever you want to in the minors.
Absolutely. But Mike Elias, you know Mike Elias. He didn't make all these moves, including trading Jorge Lopez and Trey Mancini last year, to go all in for 2023. Like, his whole thing is
in a long term. Yeah.
A long term window. So unless there's an assurance that there is a contract extension, I don't see a world where, you know, Elias trades for a 1 year return.
No. It's a, hey, we will trade and bring you to Baltimore as long as you sign this 10-year deal.
Right. I think even 5-year deal, but yeah, there's an extension in there.
Sure.
Josh,
but I think that would be anywhere that they trade Ohtani for a $30 million player. There's very few teams that are willing to give that up for 1 year or part of a year.
Right. I mean, or the return will be significantly less. I mean, this is what the Dodgers did with Manny Machado, right? The return was less.
Yeah.
Though maybe not if Dean Kramer turned into a star. Suckers. We'll see about that. But the other thing that's going to be interesting to watch, Josh, this offseason is there any pursuit or attempt to the Orioles to extend
yes,
Rutschman
and Gunner.
Or Gunner?
Because I am all in the camp of extend them both now.
And I think Elias is in that camp too. The question is, because it just makes fiscal sense.
Yeah.
And you see small to mid-market teams do this all the time. I mean, the Braves are the best at this. They have half their roster signed up for 2029.
Right. And the Angels kind of started this years ago with Mike Trout.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we see it done all the time now with Wander Franco with the Rays, Julio Rodriguez with the more recently with the Mariners. I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, Adley Rutschman is an interesting example because he plays at catcher. And usually, you know, you sign these 10, 12-year extensions. And is Adley Rutschman going to be catching for 12 years?
Right.
And if not, how valuable is Adley Rutschman as a first baseman or DH? Unlike these other positions like Gunner at shortstop and even being younger, like Gunnar, what is like 3 years younger than Adley and plays a shortstop, a position that's less taxing. So like a 12-year deal almost makes more sense for Gunnar, who I think, by the way, is represented by Scott Boras, which is not a good sign for a contract extension. But anyway, just something to watch this offseason is, can they extend either of those guys?
That's something to watch for. I mean, Gunnar Henderson agent. You think it's Scott Boras? One of them is Scott Boras.
I'm pretty sure it's Gunnar Henderson, but I'm just basing that on my feeble memory.
Hey, you know who? You know who got sent down when Gunnar came up?
I don't remember.
Tyler Nevins. To bring it full circle to your predictions.
Did he? Yeah. See, if your prediction didn't come true, maybe Tyler Nevin would have gotten 20 home runs if he wasn't sent down for Gunnar. So your prediction stopped my prediction from happening. Thanks a lot. No, but I mean, can you imagine a full year of Gunnar and Adley in the Millis lineup? It's just, it's something to be excited about.
Gunnar Henderson is with Scott Boras.
Yeah, I thought so. And I don't know. I think if you go back and look at all these extensions that players are signing at young ages, I would almost bet money that zero of them are represented by Scott Boras. Like Scott Boras is the king.
Yeah, hold out.
Free agency.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even, you know, as long as he possibly can.
Right.
As we've experienced as Oriole fans. So that's going to be something interesting to watch. Can they get a deal done? But again, ultimately, it's not Scott Boras' decision. It's Gunnar Henderson's decision.
Yep.
And what Mike Elias has done, to Mike Elias's everlasting credit, is he's made Baltimore a place to be, right? Like, it's not like before, maybe a couple years ago, the idea of signing a 12-year extension with Orioles would be, you know, you're in purgatory. You're
right.
This is not something a young player want to do. Now, this seems to be like the place to be. People want to be drafted for the Orioles. People are signing with the Orioles. Like, this is, everyone knows this is an up-and-coming team that's going to be good for a long time. And so
going all of a sudden, it's
more appealing now.
Yeah. This is the first time going into the offseason that we do not have to overpay for a free agency because we're Baltimore.
Yeah, and we don't even have to overpay for pitchers because
we moved the
wall. Yeah, we moved the wall back. We're now a pitcher-friendly park. You still, and maybe hopefully you don't have to pitch against Aaron Judge if we trade him.
No, right. Either way, you play him less than you used to.
Yep, either way, you play him less.
We get this balanced schedule or unbalanced schedule, whatever they call it next year, where we get to play every team in the majors. It's going to be a little different, and it definitely works in favor of the Orioles.
Yeah, because AL East is dominant, and they'll be dominant next year again. I have no reason to think that the Red Sox and the Blue Jays and the Rays won't be active in free agency and the Yankees making moves.
Right. We've seen the Red Sox go last to first far too many times.
Yeah, they do this like every other year.
They're competitive.
Yep. They spend money. It's going to be interesting. Josh, I tasked you a couple weeks ago, our last show, of naming your top free agents. We don't have to do it this episode. We can do it next week if you want.
Let's do it next week.
Okay, I know I have three guys where I'm not just going with the top guy in the market. I'm saying here are three guys we could realistically get all three of these guys.
Right.
And I think you just take these three guys and let's roll with next year. And
they're Carlos Correa, Jake.
No, it's not like that. I have a couple guys a little bit down the list who I think we could get.
All right, so you want a realistic list?
Yeah, I mean Carlos Correa is on my list. I'll be honest.
Carlos Correa is on my list too, I guess. List. And unfortunately, Scherzer signed a long-term thing with the Mets, so Scherzer is not on my list as much as I want him to be.
Yeah. I don't know, but after he pitched the way he pitched in the playoffs, is he still on your list?
Yeah, he's still on my list. I still love the guy. He's still my favorite pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, I'm a fan of his too. But no, let's get into it next week. Our kind of top free agent wants.
Yeah.
Maybe we can have a dream scenario and a more realistic scenario. And we'll see how high our expectations really are. Because I think we haven't talked specific names, but just hearing you talk about it, Josh, I'm nervous for you. And that I think your expectations for this offseason are too high. Mine are high too. I think yours might be a little bit too high.
It's making
me a little nervous.
I expect one of the top 10 players, top 10 free agents to be in Baltimore next year.
Okay, that's fine. How many of the top 25 free agents?
Oh, I'm only expecting one. I'm only counting
okay,
one.
Okay, okay, okay.
Yeah, no, I joke when I say give me Carlos Correa and Trey Turner.
Right.
No.
No, but you want a top free agent hitter and a top free agent pitcher, don't you?
I do. I do. And you're right. And but the top 25, I'm expecting one top 10, and then give me someone else. Like, you're not going to get Syndergaard and DeGrom. So give me one of them.
All right. Well, Syndergaard would be a lot cheaper than DeGrom. So maybe you can do a Syndergaard deal and a Correa deal or something. But we can get into it next week. All right. Anything else for the good of the cause, Josh, before we get out of here?
I think we're all good. I mean, this is the fun part of the season. This is where we need 336ers to buckle down, start spreading the word, sharing the show, get people hyped for next season. Because, hey, you guys watching those Ravens games? They're constantly disappointing at the end of the game.
So yeah, I'm still high season. On my Ravens. I know they've been
disappointed. I'm still high, too. It's amazing how bad the second halves of these games are.
I know, but I think some of it's fixable, and it will get fixed.
By DeSean Jackson.
By DeSean Jackson, and more importantly, by Bateman.
Tweeting
more stuff. I think that will help.
LOL.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening, boys and girls. Follow us on all your social media platforms. Like Josh said, share the word. Write us a review on iTunes.
Share the word.
Yeah.
Sounds like a church thing. Share the word.
Yeah. Get it out there. Spread the word. The community needs to hear about it. Spread the word all across your community.
There's a guy in my neighborhood who has this little 6-foot ladder. And he dresses up in his like Mormon outfit, like the black pants, white shirt, black tie. And he goes and stands on his 6-foot ladder on the corner with a bullhorn. And yells about how everybody needs Jesus.
Yeah.
And how the world is coming to an end. And COVID's just the start of all of this. And you need Jesus. The only answer is Jesus. We need some people to go do that about Section 336.
I compete with bullhorns, talk about Section 336, best podcast.
Yeah. But preferably up in Baltimore, not down here in Florida.
Yeah, that's probably true. More bang for your buck there in Baltimore. All right. You can follow us on Twitter. Oh, and next week, maybe, too, this off-season, we can get into our book talks again, too, because I got some. I've been reading kind of like a crazy person right lately. I got some books.
I bought a Kindle, which means I'm reading.
All right, nice.
And not just listening. So, yeah, we can definitely bring book talk back this off-season.
Yeah, that COVID-19 end of the world made me think of a book I just read. Okay. But, yeah, you can follow us. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Birdland Sports, all the T-shirts are on sale till the end of the World Series. Which is really till the end of the month or something. They're on sale cheap.
So if you haven't gotten your
next year,
your Gunner T-shirt, go and get your Gunner T-shirt now. Because he's going to be there next year. Get the Gunner T-shirt before he signs his 12-year extension.
Yeah. So all of the shirts are valid for next year, except maybe the Why Not 2022s. Those what about you might not want to grab.
Your Rougned Odor.
Rougned Odor. He's riding a bull. Doesn't matter what year that is, it's classic.
Yeah, fair enough. It'll always be remembered for this year and his heroics and stupidity this year, all wrapped in one. You can follow us on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Section336. Follow Josh on Twitter
at Josh Soroka.
Thanks for listening, boys and girls. And as always, go O's and go Ravens.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELDWIN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELDWIN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.